From Vermont Public, this is The Frequency. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. It's Friday, January 3rd, and here are today's headlines. The Agency of Agriculture this week began testing Vermont's milk supply for bird flu. That's after the U.S. Department of Agriculture last month said all milk in the country sent over state lines would need to be tested. In Vermont, officials originally planned to only test milk at large processing plants, but they've since changed course, opting to test milk earlier at farms to better protect their milk supply. Bird flu has been detected in dairy herds in 16 states, but has not yet been found in cows in Vermont. Staff from the State Agency of Agriculture will visit every dairy farm in the state once a month to sample the milk. The Scott administration is seriously considering a plan to allow Vermonters to play most of the state's lottery games online. Liquor and Lottery Department Commissioner Wendy Knight says studies indicate online access would attract a new group of people, not peel away some of the Vermonters already buying paper tickets.
This is just a way to really modernize and to really sort of to expand the players, right? Because the thought process is that that iLottery appeals to your non-traditional lottery players.
The Scott administration estimates an online lottery system could generate an additional $3 to $4 million in revenue for the state. Any plan would require legislative approval. One of the longest-serving members of Burlington City Council announced this week that she will not seek re-election next year. Democrat Joan Shannon was first elected in 2003 and represents the Queen City's South End. During her two decades on the council, Shannon pushed for a range of policies, most notably spearheading an ordinance to ban smoking in bars and clubs. That law came before Vermont's statewide ban. Shannon ran for mayor last year, but lost to progressive Emma Mulvaney-Stanek. Burlington Democrats will caucus January 5th and select a candidate to run for Shannon's seat on town meeting day in March. The developer planning to build a new mountain village at the base of Killington Ski Resort says if local and state permitting goes as planned, they hope to begin construction in 2026. Michael Sneed is CEO of Great Gulf Killington, and he says the multi-phase build-out of residential, commercial, event, and green spaces will generate 3,800 construction jobs as part of a $3 billion investment over a 25-year period.
And then once the village is built, in year 10, the hospitality side takes over the whole property management, the rental, the hospitality, and we project 1,500 hospitality jobs. Those would be permanent jobs going forward.
Sneed says Great Gulf is also working with officials in Killington and Rutland City to create much-needed worker housing. The Dartmouth men's basketball team this week dropped its attempt to unionize, ending a push to become the first college athletes to bargain for a contract. Service Employees International Union Local 560 filed a request to withdraw the petition to the National Labor Relations Board rather than take its chances with a potentially unfriendly panel under the new presidential administration. The request was then approved by the board's regional director. Although the NCAA considers players student-athletes, Dartmouth basketball players petitioned the Labor Board in 2023 for the right to unionize, saying the school exercised so much control over their schedules and working conditions that they met the legal definition of employees. Coming up, for half a century, the same volunteers organized the annual Christmas bird count in Woodstock, Vermont. Reporter Lexi Krupp has the story, along with how many feathered friends were chronicled for this year's annual total. That's after this. Every year around the holidays, thousands of people all over the country take part in a community science project called the Christmas Bird Count. It's run by the National Audubon Society, and it relies on volunteers to record every bird they see or hear within a set 15-mile circle over 24 hours. Scientists use the data to track how different species are doing. As Vermont Public's Lexi Krupp reports, Woodstock's Christmas Bird Count has been organized by the same volunteer for the past 50 years and always ends with a turkey dinner.
About 20 people gathered in a church in Woodstock in late December as it got dark. They'd spent the day walking and driving and looking out kitchen windows, searching for birds in a big circle that covers most of Woodstock and Bridgewater and parts of Plymouth and Killington.
How we usually do this is to go around to all of our groups, find out how many birds people saw, and then we go through our list species by species.
Sally Laughlin started organizing the Christmas bird count here 50 years ago. She talked about those early days by phone.
I knew to begin with that after the count, we needed to have a nice time to get together and have supper.
So some counts just go home and then they do it by the, from the written forms, but not nearly as much fun if you have everybody together.
And she's still organizing the event. These days, the count is something of a reunion, like for T. McLean and Kyle Jones of Stratford.
Yeah, we like the Bird Geeks.
Some of us, we run into each other frequently, and others, this is the only time in the year that we see each other.
Kyle has been doing Christmas bird counts since he was a teenager.
I always want to be doing at least one bird count. Usually I do more. This year might be a one bird count year.
Why? It's fun. That's why I started in the first place. It's a great source of enjoyment. And it still is. I mean, it's a little more difficult at this point. But.
Ed Hack has been part of the Woodstock count since its beginning. He helped draw the original circle using USGS maps and a string. A lot has changed since then. No more sending letters to coordinate volunteers. There are fewer bird feeders in the villages, more seasonal homes. Some of the birds are different, too. Fewer black ducks and evening grosbeaks, more tufted titmice and Carolina wrens. As the original birders have gotten older, they're adapting, like for Ed.
It's a little upsetting. I can't do it like I like to do, but that's the name of the game. You know, things happen. This works well for me, though, because I can do it from the car or the roadside or from my kitchen window.
And there are some new faces, like Holly Henderson of Queechee. She brought her husband and two young kids this year.
My plan is for this to be our family's Christmas tradition. We're going to be probably permanent residents in this area for the rest of our lives. So we'll be doing it for decades, I hope.
Sally Laughlin won't be leading the event in the decades to come. She's retiring after this year. The group celebrated her with a card and a cake.
An amazing person.
It was decorated with a picture of Sally working at a desk with a baby owl sitting on her lap. She raised the bird while she ran a nonprofit in town, the Vermont Institute of Natural Science, or VINS. And while Sally won't be running the show next year, the turkey dinner will remain.
Down and introduce yourselves. We've got a lot of people here who haven't been here before.
And so will the bird business at the end of the evening.
Black cat chickadee.
37.
There you go.
131.
113. For Vermont Public, I'm Lexi Krupp.
120.
In the days after the count, Sally Laughlin shared the final data for Woodstock. 2,423 birds of 39 species. And now we ask, what will the new year bring in the world of sports? For our first installment of the weekly recap for 2025, we're going to take a look ahead a bit and try to read some tea leaves. But first, a quick recap of the week that was. And we'll start with the NHL, which tied another bow on the outdoor annual Winter Classic, this one between two teams currently out of the playoff picture, the Chicago Blackhawks and St. Louis Blues. The Blues got the better of the still-rebuilding Hawks in a 6-2 win at Wrigley Field. Veteran defenseman Cam Fowler scored twice to lead St. Louis, but really the outcome of the game was less important than the atmosphere and novelty of seeing hockey played outdoors in a venue better known as one of the cathedrals of baseball. One of the things I love about the Winter Classic is how it reminds you that no matter how cold, dark, and blustery it may be now, pitchers and catchers start reporting for spring training in February, so the spring and summer pleasures of baseball are not far off. The Boston Bruins are one of those teams, though, that may need to decide whether they're going to be buyers or sellers by the time the March trade deadline rolls around. Yes, they've righted the ship somewhat since firing head coach Jim Montgomery and giving the reins to Joe Sacco in the interim, but after dropping a 3-1 decision to the Washington Capitals on New Year's Eve and pinning the outcome of their game last night against the spiraling New York Rangers, the Bees are hovering around third place in the Atlantic and feeling pressure from teams right behind them should they slide into competition for one of the two available wild cards. The Tampa Bay Lightning sit just behind the Bruins for third place, and they've got four games in hand on Boston, so the math is in their favor, and there's a ton of company vying for the wild card. After the Lightning, the Senators, Penguins, Blue Jackets, and Flyers are all within striking distance of the two available spots. And don't sleep on the suddenly surging Montreal Canadiens. After trailing 2-0 on New Year's Eve against a very good Las Vegas squad that had won 6 in a row, the Habs came back to win that game 3-2 and have now won 3 in a row in 7 of their last 10, and they still have plenty of time to sneak into the playoff conversation. As for the Bruins, if they haven't established themselves as a near-certain playoff lock before the Four Nations tournament starts in February, GM Don Sweeney may need to consider whether it makes more sense to sell off some players and shore up what is now a pretty weak farm system of minor leaguers to build for the future, even if that means disappointing a fan base that had much higher expectations after big contracts were handed out this year to Elias Lindholm and Nikita Zadorov. And if a sell-off does occur, does Bruins ownership consider whether it's time for a change in management? Sweeney has been in charge since 2015 and has not delivered a Stanley Cup to Boston during his tenure. In the NBA, the Boston Celtics shrugged off a loss to the Indiana Pacers with a blowout win over the Toronto Raptors this week. Now, much has been made of the defending champs already having lost more games at home this year than they did all of last season. But the call here is that the Celtics will turn it up a notch in the playoffs and become the first team to win back-to-back titles since the Golden State Warriors did it in 2017 and 2018. Over in the NFL, the New England Patriots mercifully wrap up their season at Buffalo Sunday, a game every Pats fan should hope they lose. If the Patriots finish with the league's worst record, they will land the top pick in the draft, which they would then be wise to trade to a team in need of a franchise quarterback, getting multiple lower picks in return to fill the myriad of holes in their roster. It may not be an easy game for the Pats to lose, though, as you can expect the Bills to rest nearly all of their best players, this game is meaningless for them, in order to avoid injury before their playoff push starts, and the Bills are a legitimate Super Bowl contender. And the best game to finish out the season will have the Minnesota Vikings visiting the Detroit Lions on Sunday to decide which squad will win the NFC North and get home field advantage throughout the playoffs. That division is so strong this year that whichever team loses, even with the 14-3 record that will result, they'll actually be a wild card entry into the postseason. The 7-8 University of Vermont men's basketball team has a good chance to even their record at 500 on the season when they tip off against America East rivals New Hampshire in Durham tomorrow night. The Wildcats are just 2-10 on the season so far. And finally, Vermonter Noah Dines spent 2024 setting a new world record of human-powered vertical feet skied in a year. In an Instagram update this week, Dines shared that he climbed more than 3.5 million feet last year, spending more than 2,200 hours skiing over 6,000 miles. Dines wrote that now is the time for rest and relaxation, which I approve of since it made me tired just reading what he did. And he was quick to add after the R&R, more skiing. And that's our Friday check-in on news from the world of sports. Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Howard Weiss-Tisman, Bob Kinzel, Liam Elder-Connors, Nina Keck, and Nathaniel Wilson. Our executive producer is Kevin Trevelyan, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. Talk to you Monday.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.